Okay, dear Dhamma friends, we are going to start the Sutta teaching session. So in this session, we are referring various suttas which Buddha has preached, and we are trying to get some insights from those, because Suttame Jnana, or the wisdom that we are trying to obtain from Buddha's teaching, is immense, and there are various insights and various guidance that we can actually take from those suttas. So far we have discussed several suttas, started with Sabbasava Sutta, and then we discussed about Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, and now we are discussing Mahasatipatthana Sutta. Mahasatipatthana Sutta, as you already know, is available in Majjhima Nikaya as well as in Digha Nikaya. Yeah, the middle length discourses and the long discourses are included. And also there are so many Satipatthana referred suttas all together collected and put it in the Samyutta Nikaya. That is called Satipatthana Samyutta. And we have taken Satipatthana Sutta from Majjhima Nikaya. And this sutta was preached by the Buddha while he was residing at a city called Kammasadhamma. And it belongs to the country of Kuru. So at that time, Buddha talking to the bhikkhus, and he is mentioning about Ekayana Magga. Ekayana Vayam Bhikkave Maggo Sattanam Visuddhya. Monks, there is a direct path to purification of the beings. Soka Pariddhavanam Samatikka Maya. In order to overcome sorrow and lamentation. Dukkha Domanasanam Atthagamaya. In order to eradicate suffering and various types of mental despair. Nyayasa adhigamaya. And in order to know the correct path, in order to know the direct path, in order to know the real path which ultimately leading us to the complete liberation. So in order to know that correct path, the noble path, and that is also as a result or as a benefit of practicing Satipatthana. Nibbana asa sachikiriyaya. In order to realize Nibbana. So all these benefits which Buddha refers are extremely valuable benefits and extremely important benefits. And as Buddhists, we all want to realize Nibbana, and as all Buddhists, we want to realize the correct path, and we want to remove whatever the suffering, lamentation, sorrow. So all these are very necessary benefits. As human beings, we all desire these benefits. And therefore, in a way, Satipatthana becomes one of the key path, one of the key methodology which Buddha has mentioned. And it is not actually unique to our Buddha. Even the previous Buddhas have preached the same Satipatthana. So therefore, while our Buddha, Gautama Buddha, was referring Satipatthana Sutta, or he planned to preach Satipatthana Sutta, immediately one Brahma called Sahampati appeared in front of him, and he praised Buddha, telling that you have taken the correct path, you have taken the direct path, you are now going to preach that noble Sutta. And this is what Sutta mentioned or preached by various previous Buddhas as well. So they also understood that the purification of the beings is possible by this Satipatthana. So you too have now selected preaching that sutta, and therefore I pay my reverence. I pay my homage to you. So like that, there were such incidents have happened even before Buddha preached Satipatthana. So we can understand there is a great importance to our practice, and that's why we have taken this sutta. And Buddha starts with sort of giving us the summary. Ida bhikkave bhikkhu kaye kayanupassi viharati. So in this sasana, in this very life, so a monk, a practitioner, is now taking his own body and trying to contemplate. He is looking at it directly. It is not through a book, it is not through from someone else's information or someone else's guidance. Rather, you yourself have to look at the body. So this is a direct experience. So that is why kaye kayanupassi. That term refers that one has to look at one's own body and it is immediate, it is so electric, and it is so direct. It is not inferential, but rather it's a direct knowledge. Atapi. So there are four qualities where Buddha refers here. Atapi, Sampajano, Satima, Vinayaloke, Abhijja, Domanasan. So this actually refers sort of prerequisites, or we can say sort of background qualities that we need to maintain as much as possible. Atapi. One has to have ardent effort, because the path may not immediately give you satisfactory results. Because as you know, our minds are constantly distracted towards the past incidents, past memories, and again thinking about the future, planning about the future. So there are as a constant distractions, constant restlessness available in the mind. So if one is trying to immediately keep your attention on the present moment, so it may not be immediately successful. So one has to be fairly patient, and one has to fairly endure the situation, and that actually requires ardent effort. So one has to maintain a long-term effort. It is not a 1 week, 10 days effort. Rather, one has to maintain a long-term effort, several years. And while practicing, again, there may be day-to-day unsatisfactoriness, day-to-day troubles, obstacles might come on your way. So in order to overcome that, so there are also effort necessary. And while practicing, one has to calm down the effort. It is not that you are maintaining a great effort during the practice, but it is circumstantial. One has to maintain necessary amount of effort, otherwise the other factors might not grow. So likewise, there's a beautiful balance one has to maintain when one engage in the practice practically. And then atapi sampajano. Sampajano is where clearly knowing. One has to know clearly what is the primary object. The details or the behavior of the primary object has to be clearly known. Satima. One has to be mindful, in the sense one has to have very good present moment awareness. Vinayi loke abhijja domanasam, as much as possible one has to overcome or keep aside greed and aversion. So now under this Kayanupassana section, we have already discussed Anapanasati. That is the method Buddha first mentioned in this sutta, and how one can be mindful while maintaining one's attention on breathing. Breathing is a process available from our birth moment and till the death. So this is again a very natural process. It's an involuntary process. We don't need to purposely breathe. Rather, we can, the breath happens, or rather the body breathes. So now we are trying to use that involuntary process in order to improve our mindfulness, increase our mindfulness. So I'll just summarize that part. Basically, Buddha asked us to find a suitable place, because at the beginning you need to have as much as possible a silent place, a secluded place, a pleasant place, a place which is things are in order, so that the mental environment would be so pleasant. So when one found such place, one has to keep oneself direct or erect. One sit cross-legged as if possible, and keep the upper half of the body erect, the neck erect, and again head also straight. And one may close one's eyes in a very gentle manner, and one has to keep one's attention at the nostril or closer to the upper lip. So while keeping one's attention there, one should know in breath. When in breath happens, one should know that. One should be aware of that. And when out-breath happens, one should be aware of that. Sato vasa sati, sato passa sati. So this is in a way appear very simple, but as you know, practically when we are engaged with it, so many distractions, so many disturbances. Mind doesn't like to stay with such neutral object. It appear very boring, so you might fall asleep, or you might again start thinking about the past or the future. So many difficulties. But the technique itself is extremely simple. And again, we should not make it complicated either. So as much as possible, we have to maintain this simplicity, the simplicity of the technique, taking us to the more deeper levels of understanding, more deeper levels of realizations. So therefore, we should never contaminate that technique. We should never complicate that technique. But unfortunately, our mind never appreciates it. So at the beginning, so we need to take various ways and means to tackle it. So we may be using labeling, counting, in order to take our mind to the present moment. And once we are successful, so we can maintain our attention on series of breaths. There are series of in-breaths and out-breaths. For continuously, we may be able to maintain our attention. Then we say, okay, our mind has fairly tamed. Our mind can now stay with 100 breaths, 200 breaths. So while doing that, Buddha does not stop us there. So he requests us to observe the breath closely, trying to recognize its characteristics, whether it is long, whether it is short, what are the differences between in-breath and out-breath, from which nostril it goes in, from which nostril it goes out, whether it is warm, whether it is cool. So likewise, there are very minor differences, subtle differences. So one should try to recognize these subtle differences. That actually improves the clear comprehension, sampajanya. And while doing that, we may reach the second or the third stage. That is where we are trying to know the complete phases of the breath. It is not abruptly breath begins, rather it begins very slowly or very gradually, starting with very gentle, soft manner, and then reaching to its middle, and then again fading away and ultimately disappears. And just before the beginning of out-breath, there's a little gap. And the out-breath also begins very softly, gradually, and it also reaches its threshold, the middle part, and then again that too fades away. And again, after a little gap, the next in-breath begins. So likewise, there's a cyclic nature to this breath. So one has to recognize that. Now, if we get on to today's topic, now we can actually come to the second part where Buddha talks about Iriyapata Pabba. So breath is actually a refined object. On the other hand, various postures that we all maintain daily are in a way little gross. So sometimes for certain people, rather than immediately going to breath, maybe it is easy to go to the posture. Say for example, while sitting, you can know that you are sitting. The body is sort of kept comfortably and legs are bent and body is erect. The upper half of the body is erect. You are keeping your hands on your lap. So likewise, as a pyramid, as a hands hill, so the body appears very stable. So you can keep your attention on this stable sitting posture. On the other hand, if you are on a lying down posture, that too can be known. Again, if you are in standing posture, that too can be known. Again, if you are in walking posture, that too can be known. So likewise, we can know in which posture at the moment or present moment which body maintains. So these postures, therefore, is used as a technique to establish mindfulness. Say you are waiting for a bus. At that time, maybe you are standing. So at that standing position, you can have a sort of introspection. You can have a sort of attention to your whole body, the standing posture. Say your whole weight is concentrated at your foot, at your soles, at your heel, and the calf muscles are rest. So likewise, you are sort of scanning the body and maintaining your attention within the body. Similarly, while walking. Now, walking, also another posture that we are daily using. But even though we use it, we never become mindful about this posture. We may be planning what we are going to do after we reach the destination. but the body is walking. Or we may be thinking about the past, what has happened, but the body is walking. So instead of thinking about the past and the future, one is now trying to maintain one's attention on this present moment walking. Body is currently walking, and our mind is also now trying to be aware of that walking. So the physical process and the mental attention or mental process are in harmony. We are trying to synchronize both processes. So that is quite important, because there are various activities daily we may be involved with, but our mind is not really engaged in that activity. Rather, mind is in a different world. Mind is dreaming. Mind is fantasizing. Now we are trying to break that.
Mala, come and eat.
I request all the participants to keep their mics muted. So, this so the walking posture is where we are trying to maintain our attention, and in this walking posture, Buddha specially mentioned about walking meditation. So walking meditation is actually one of the oldest technique practiced by many practitioners. Unfortunately, it was not given enough attention, not given enough prominence. So sometimes in certain traditions, it has also completely disappeared. Fortunately, there are suttas where Buddha directly mentions even the benefits of walking meditation. Say for example, there's a beautiful sutta called Chankamananisansa Sutta in Anguttara Nikaya, where Buddha talks 5 benefits of walking meditation. Starting with Adhanakkhamohoti, refers as one is able to walk for a long distance. You know, during the good old days, there are no vehicles or any other transporting methods. Rather, one has to use one's walking in order to reach a destination. So, on such situation, if one can't walk or one is unable to walk, then it is difficult to reach that destination. But if one practices walking meditation, so that actually helps to develop this skill so that one can reach even long distance. So, this Adhanakkhamohoti refers that the skill or ability where one can reach long destination, or one can travel long destination, long distance. Then Padhanakkhamohoti, that is where one can have an enduring practice. One can do a great practice, a great endurance, great effort, because walking meditation itself is a challenging process, challenging task. So you are developing walking meditation itself in that challenging environment. So if you are successful, then that ardent effort or that skill can be used to various other activities as well. You may have various other day-to-day activities. Those are challenging, and there are various obstacles coming on your way, and you can face them bravely because you have trained during the walking meditation. So this Padhanakkhamohoti refers that we are, in order to attain liberation, in order to have full realization, you need great effort. So this great effort is slowly being developed through the walking meditation. Then Buddha says Appabadohoti. So one become free from various illnesses. One become healthy, because walking is a very good exercise, and as a result, so your digestions become very good, and again your body become fairly flexible, active. As a result, there are so many ailments will be disappeared, so your body become healthy. Asite pite khaite saite samma parinamam gacchati. So while walking, all the digestion system functions very well. So therefore Buddha mentions, so if you want to have that benefit, so that is also available through the walking meditation. And lastly, Buddha mentioned Chankamadi Gato Samadhi Chirattitiko Hoti, where the concentration, the one-pointedness developed through walking meditation is long-lasting. Now, if you consider the samadhi, concentration developed through sitting session, it might be easily broken if someone come and talk to you. If once you are getting up, if there is a disturbance, if there are noises. So likewise, the concentration developed while sitting is fairly fragile. But on the other hand, if one is able to develop fair amount of concentration through walking practice, so that is lasting, that is enduring, that is durable. So that benefit is also there. So therefore, there are many benefits in walking meditation, and the way one practice is to find a suitable place. You may sort of prepare your house or prepare your corridor, or if possible, you can have a separate walking path, and you go to the one side and you are simply going to the other side without taking any burden. Simply you walk here and you walk from this end to the other end. So after practicing that for about 5 minutes, so then you become familiar with the walking path, and then slowly you have to keep your attention on the touching sensation of the foot, and each time you are intentionally walking, each step is taken intentionally, and you are keeping your eyes open, and as much as possible you are not moving your hands, you are keeping it in the front or the back. And while doing that, you are sort of maintaining your attention in the front and not entirely focusing on any particular place, rather the eyes are simply guiding you. And while doing such activity, you are trying to keep your attention on the foot. So each time the foot is lifted and moved and then placed. So if this complete process or this complete activity has to be done very mindfully. So likewise, if one is able to develop this walking meditation, walking practice, one is able to develop mindfulness and the ability to correctly aim one's attention and to immediately keep one's attention on the place where it is necessary. There are so many benefits, and there are other postures like sitting posture. There also you can keep your attention on the body, and later this sitting posture become refined. Actually, when you are being aware of various postures, sitting posture, walking posture, standing posture, lying down posture, if you are able to maintain continuous mindfulness throughout the day, then you may understand, although I am talking that I am living, I am eating, I am walking, I am sitting, if we keep out this I part, that is nothing but series of postures. And Buddha says, Gacchantova gacchamiti pajanati. When one walks, one is aware that one is walking. Titova titomhiti pajanati. When one standing, one knows that one is standing. Nisinnova nisinnomhiti pajanati. When one is sitting, one knows that one is sitting. Sayanova sayanomhiti pajanati. So that means when one is lying down, one knows that one is lying down. So likewise, so all the postures can be used to be mindful, and then you may understand it is nothing but postures. Constantly, it's a matter of maintaining postures. And these postures are also changing. So you may switch from one posture to the other posture, from lying down posture to the sitting posture, from sitting posture to the standing posture, from standing posture to the walking posture, again from walking posture to the standing posture, from standing posture to the sitting posture. So likewise, continuously, if you refer the whole day, every time, so we can understand constantly we are changing postures. So there's the beginning of the standing posture, and there's an end of standing posture. That may be the beginning of sitting posture. And we ask, there's a beginning of sitting posture, and then the ending of sitting posture, and that is where we may be lying down. So that is the beginning of lying down. And then we are lying down, and then again suppose we are sitting. That is the ending of the lying down posture, and now that is the beginning of the sitting posture. So likewise, there's a sort of beginning and end of each posture. And Buddha actually includes all the other minor postures as well. Yatha yatha va panasakayo panihito hoti tatha tathanam pajanati. Where whatever the minor posture or sub posture that one is maintaining, so even that one is knowing. So this is where our mindfulness become refined, and not only the four main postures but even the sub postures or minor postures are included. So this is where actually the rising and falling also comes under, where when you are sitting, so at the beginning you simply have the sitting posture, awareness of sitting posture, but as your awareness refines, as your mindfulness refines, there you can recognize various subtle processes available in the body. So it may be breathing, it may be rising and falling, it may be heart vibration. So likewise, there are so many various other subtle processes, bodily processes available. So you can even pay attention to those bodily processes. Those are also comes under these subtle postures. Now, when as you're breathing in, the abdomen comes forward, rising. As you breathe out, abdomen comes back, falling. So each and every rising and falling contributes to the development of mindfulness. So you can be aware of this rising and falling. So rising and falling is one of the very popular method, because sometimes anapanasati, mindfulness on breathing, could be a little difficult for certain people. But on the other hand, if we consider rising and falling, it's a very general technique, very easy technique. And again, the sensation is fairly gross. As a result, one can establish mindfulness using rising and falling very easily. So you are keeping your attention closer to the abdomen or closer to the tummy. And as you're breathing in, it comes up or comes forward. So you are simply being aware of this rising process. And as you breathe out, and it comes back falling, and you are fully aware of that. Actually, this process and mindfulness on breathing have good parallelism. They are actually developing very similarly. So you can be aware of rising, you can be aware of falling. And if your mind distracts, you can incorporate labeling. While rising, when you know it, you call it as rising. When it is falling, you label it as falling. Rising, falling. So likewise, you can maintain this labeling. Sometimes we call manasikara, noting. So this actually helps to calm down the mind, and again improves our attention, improves our concentration. And once it is fairly improved, we can stop labeling, noting, and we can try to keep a quiet mind. Refined or silent attention is kept on each and every rising, each and every falling. There you might understand it is not a single rising, it may be a series of rising. It may not be, it's not a single falling, it may be a series of fallings. So this is where our clear comprehension is improved. Sampajano. So each and every time Buddha refers, so once establishing mindfulness is the first step. Once you establish mindfulness, next step is to refine your mindfulness, refine your clear comprehension by paying closely attention to the primary object. There you can recognize subtle behavior of this object. And each rising has a beginning and it has a end. And there may be a little gap. And again, each falling has a beginning and then the end. And then there's a gap. then again the next rising. So likewise, this also has a cyclic nature. And if you are able to recognize series of minute risings within a single rising, and then you can even recognize kind of arising and passing away, or beginning and ending of each this minute rising. Suppose there were 10 risings, and even in there, there's a beginning and end, beginning and end. And then you reach the gap, or it's a kind of a silent period. There also you can recognize there's a beginning and then the end. Then there's another series of fallings. So this minute falling also has a beginning and end. So you are recognizing each and every beginning and end. So this way, now Buddha is taking us to the Satipatthana Bhavana, where you are developing mindfulness. You are developing the careful attention. So your mind is well maintained on this rising and falling, and you are continuously paying attention, and you are maintaining good effort. You are not giving up, and you are able to overcome various hindrances, and you are clearly knowing the whole process. And as much as possible, you are maintaining an equanimous mind. Vinayya loke abhijja domanasam. You are as much as possible, you are not greedy of the process, you are not attached to the process, or you are not having any sort of a resentment towards the process. As much as possible, you are maintaining a neutral attitude. So the proper background or the environment is maintained. While such conducive environment is maintained, you are observing this rising and falling process very closely. Now suppose you are able to understand this process, then you will understand there are so many minute kind of posture differences, posture changes, and even these posture changes you can be mindful. We sometimes call them as posture junctions, iriyapada sandhi, where you are able to recognize these junctions, these changes. So that is also where contributes toward the sati sampajanya, towards the clear comprehension. So likewise, we can understand, even though we start with establishing mindfulness, leaving aside the past and the future, and maintaining your attention in the present moment. So that is not the end. That is the first step. So once you are successful in first step, then you have to clearly know what is going on. You need to understand the full process. You need to understand the full behavior of the primary object. So that actually gives us opportunity to develop insight. And that is where Buddha says, okay, one will understand samudaya dhamma anupassīva kāyasmin viharati, vaya dhamma anupassīva kāyasmin viharati, samudaya vaya dhamma anupassīva kāyasmin viharati. One constantly know that there's a arising nature to all these bodily phenomena. There's a passing away nature to this all bodily phenomena. Especially here the postures, sub-postures, posture junctions, and minute levels of various other posture changes. Now each bodily process therefore has a beginning and an end. And one clearly knows it, and for a favorable period of time, for a long period of time, one is observing it as a direct experience. It is not through a book, it is not through a preaching, rather one clearly knows it very directly. So this is extremely important. Here you are not trying to forcefully condition your mind by putting or borrowing someone else's knowledge. Rather, you are maintaining a very fresh mind, very novice mind, but quite attentive, quite equanimous, and very fresh. And to that knowing mind, you are as much as possible teaching. So it's very much like educating a child. So child has a very fresh mind, he has a beginner's mind, and as much as possible we are trying to restrain him and not to distract him, and we are now trying to teach him. So that teaching process has to be very effective. So similarly, our mind also like a child, so we are trying to keep it very simple, very gentle, and not distracted carefully attentive, and to that we are allowing various processes to go through. So then the mind will learn from all these processes. So these processes themselves have their real nature. So they are exposing that real nature. So we are learning from that real nature. So they will show how they are behaving, how they are rising, how they are passing away, how long are they going to last. So likewise, their real behavior is now evident to the mind. So through this, the mind has a deeper understanding. It's a kind of realization. So this is where the last part of the section, Attikāyotiva panasya satipacchupattitā hoti. So the mind will understand, okay, there is a body, there is no person, there is no individual, there is no I, there is no being, but there is a body or there is a bodily processes. Yāvadeva jñānamattāya patissati mattāya. And there are various insights possible, like how transient it is, how impermanent it is, and constantly these whole processes are subjected to this transient nature, impermanent nature, and there are various other causes conditioned in this process, and there are no control at all over these processes, and they are sort of causal or dependent arising, and I simply have no control at all. So basically you will understand this impermanent nature, unsatisfactory nature, and non-governability. And there is no inner essence of this whole process. There is no inner core. So there is no inner soul. There is no lasting soul. This non-self nature or non-self characteristics also going to be understood. So likewise, the three characteristics, three universal characteristics, anicca, dukkha, anatta, going to be deeply recognized, deeply understood. And that leads to sort of disenchantment, what is called nibbida, and one becomes dispassionate. The processes are there, you are now become dispassionate. You allow things to happen rather than trying to grasp things. Now you allow things to happen. And slowly the detachment improves, and there's a possibility of complete detachment or complete relinquishment. And there the mind become unassociated, not attached to anything in the world. Anissitocha viharati nachakinchi loke upadhyati. Where one's mind is completely liberated, but very temporary. And one's mind is completely free from any grasping to anything in the world. So when one has this kind of an insight, it's a kind of an eye-opening insight. So far, one's mind is extremely burdened and extremely hindered because of various defilements. But at least for a short period, one's mind is utterly free. So how to develop this freedom, how to enhance this freedom? So that is where a complete path, a methodology is needed. So that path is nothing but the Noble Eightfold Path. And that is how the Noble Eightfold Path come into the picture. So it's a matter of continuously maintaining this mindfulness practice. And one further and further improving one's sila. Because one will understand, without maintaining bodily and verbal conduct, morality, so one can't maintain a healthy mind. So the peace of the mind fairly depends on how you interact with others, how you maintain your sila. So with understanding, then one will maintain one's sila. So one has recognized the benefits of the sila. So it is not necessary for someone else to come and force you to maintain sila. That you yourself will understand the benefits of the sila. So the sila is there. And again, as much as possible, you are maintaining good words or good communication. And then you are maintaining good livelihood, correct livelihood. So the sila is improved. And again, you are maintaining mindfulness and the necessary amount of concentration so that you can clearly know what is going on. The clarity of the mind is there. Clarity of mind has to be maintained. So the time to time you may maintain the concentration or improve the concentration if it is necessary. Otherwise the necessary clarity of the mind is maintained. So that you can clearly know what is going on. And you have the correct view. So that is nothing but to maintain a disentangled mind or unentangled mind. A mind free from any burden. Mind free from any stress.
mind free from any cluttedness, or mind free from any defilements, to have a peaceful mind, have a clear mind, unentangled mind. So this is the kind of a vision so one is maintaining. So like this, so the Sila Samadhi Panya is now in operation. So one has to live a life according to that type of environment, so that type of a criterion where one's morality is maintained, and then that supports the concentration, and the concentration supports the wisdom, and wisdom again will support the morality. So likewise, these three components are interdependent and interrelated, and they are helping each other. So likewise, so this Iriyapata Pabba, so even though it is short, Buddha very clearly shows that how this whole system, whole Satipatthana system, can be practiced so that one's mindfulness is improved, one's understanding is improved, and so that one's mind is clean, clear, purified. So with that, I like to conclude today's Sutta teaching part. Now I open the session for questions.
So one of the questions is, dear Bhante, how do we use the Brahma Vihara practice to develop insight?
Yeah, that is possible. Basically, at the beginning, I mean, as a way of keeping your mind in the middle, say for example, while your mind is angry, it is difficult to practice Anapanasati, or it is difficult to practice in most of these Satipatthan. But if you are able to maintain your mind in the middle, not angry, not attached, or not angry, not lustful, so you have the kind of equanimity. So there, the Brahma Viharas are quite important. Say for example, your mind is angry, your mind is resistive, your mind is in a resentment. So on such situation, you better practice metta or mudita, loving kindness, or sort of what you call this joy. And then again, mind become pleasant, mind become fairly equanimous. And that is a sort of a positive quality, positive state of mind. So with that positive state of mind, it is easy to practice Anapanasati, or easy to practice other Satipatthana techniques. So that is one aspect. And on the other hand, when one fairly develops Satipatthana, there also you can incorporate Brahma Vihara, but in a different manner. So there are actually, you are not trying to incorporate any kind of self-view or sort of individuality into the practice. Rather, you are doing it as a quality. What I am trying to tell here is, the Satipatthana practice leads us to a very profound understanding about causality, and again about non-self, impermanent nature. So now again, if you practice typical loving kindness, telling may I be well, may I be say free from suffering, may my father be well, may my father be free from suffering, may my mother be free from suffering, so likewise, then you are again importing this personality. You are again imposing this personality. Again, individuality view, the self view is included. So that is wrong. That is actually contradicting with the Satipatthana practice. So that is where you are. If you already develop some amount of what you call this Brahma Viharas, so you know the quality of the Brahma Vihara. So you know the quality of loving kindness. It's a kind of a pervading kind of a quality. So you can spread metta towards every direction to all the beings. And here I use the term beings just to elaborate. I mean, to all the directions you can spread metta. So you have the attitude of metta. You have the loving kindness environment in the mind. You have the sort of joyful environment in the mind. You have a compassionate environment in the mind. And you have the equanimous environment in the mind. So that quality can be incorporated to Satipatthana practice. So that is, in a way, we can say it's a different level of Brahma Viharas, and that is where sort of Brahma Viharas can be developed to the boundless level, not to the individual level, but to the boundless level. So that is the maximum that one can reach. Sometimes we call as metta cheto vimutti, mudita cheto vimutti, karuna cheto vimutti, upekkha cheto vimutti, where your mind becomes utterly freed from metta, completely freed from metta. Now on such level, there is no any individuality, there is no particular group of people. Rather, your mind is including everything. It's completely spreading metta throughout the whole universe. So this is the kind of boundless type of metta. So such thing actually can be incorporated to satipatthana. So that is not actually contradicting with satipatthana, but it is very beautifully mixing with satipatthana. It's very beautifully harmonizing with satipatthana, because satipatthana sometimes become dry. So, but if you include this sort of metta or mudita, then this dryness will be reduced and you can have a very pleasant satipatthana practice.
Thank you, Bhante. The next question is, developing insights during the satipatthana practice, is this a natural occurrence or should we proactively facilitate this unfolding?
Yeah, actually, you can't forcefully arouse insights. Rather, you simply can maintain the environment. So the environment or the conducive conditions you can maintain. So that is nothing but you have a very pleasant mind, very simple mind, this unconditioned mind, fairly equanimous mind, and again a fairly focused mind. And you are not borrowing any book knowledge. You are not trying to force the system. You simply have the passive observation, and you are simply witnessing the process with a very quiet mind. You are not, at that time there are no preconceived ideas. At that time there are no any inner chatter. So this is the environment that you need to maintain. So if such environment is maintained, if such mindset is maintained, then the possibility of insights is very high. But on the other hand, if you are so impatient, you want to have this, you want to have that, you want to become enlightened, you want to become a sotapanna, so then it is very difficult. So you have to be maintain a very simple, very innocent, very humble, sort of a very equanimous kind of mind, and then the insights may be highly possible, highly potential.
And the second part of the question is, developing insight knowledges and simple insights, are they different from each other?
Could you repeat the question, Jennifer?
Sure, Bhante. So the question is whether developing insight knowledges and simple insights, are they different from each other?
Yeah, they could be different, and they could be the enhancement of the already arisen insights as well. Say, for example, sometimes suppose you recognize you are observing a certain process and you will understand it's quite impermanent, quite transient. At another time, the same insight might arise, okay, how transient it is. So likewise, I mean, previously it is kind of eye-opening. Next time also it's sort of shocking. And then suppose another insight, completely different insight, maybe like say you are thinking as a one unit, as a one thing, and then all of a sudden everything breaks apart, and you will understand there is nothing there, basically broken into particles. The complete compactness, the compactness view, Ghanasanya, is completely broken. So likewise a completely different insight. And again, suppose once you know this whole processes are subjected to arising and passing away, is so fragile, and then again kind of even a fear can arise. So where is I? How can I exist? Because the whole, everything which I thought belongs to me, or I thought as I, is now subjected to complete transience. So how can I exist? So there's even a fear can arise. And and on the other hand, when you know that the arising and passing away nature, and it might lead you to the causality, dependent origination, that's one condition causes another condition. Avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijnanam. So likewise, so if you are able to recognize this conditionality, so those are also insights. So one is different to the other. Say for example, if you are able to recognize how Vedana conditions craving, when there's a pleasurable feeling, there's a craving arises. So this is, if you are able to recognize this very honestly, so then this is another different insight. And suppose you are able to recognize how ignorance causes some sort of a construction in the mind, preparation in the mind. So this is an entirely different insight, but fairly related with the Patisamuppada, avijja paccaya sankhara. So likewise, so it may be different insights, and it may be improvements or enhancements of the same insight.
Thank you, Bhante. And the next question is asking whether Bhante can explain under Kaya Nupassana number 3 through 6.
Yeah, you have to wait 3 more weeks.
Stay tuned. More good things to come.
Yeah.
So we will be patient.
Yes, yes, yes.
For the next question, I'd like to invite Chita Threvi to please ask your question directly.
Thank you. Thank you. My question, Bhante, is something that I have tried to work out, I have contemplated, and I would like your suggestions on how I can interpret all of it. On one side of our practice, we are trying to lose the concept of self. On the other end, we are having to practice sila and we have to decide we are going to give this or give that. We have developed generosity, compassion, karuna, loving kindness, metta, and develop the 4 divine abodes and the 10 paramis. So we have the effort for that. So there is a self there, in my opinion. But at the same time, we are trying to break this sense of self and break it down to the four elements and the atoms and the non-self and the disappearance. And I find that to understand both is a little bit not quite there yet for me. So I would like you to explain that to me a little bit, in the sense that I am veering towards the non-self, trying to meditate, feel all these particles and arising and passing away, all this kind of thing. But at the same time, I have to also create a self. So I would like you to explain that to me with clarity. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah, that's a good question. Basically, first of all, we have to establish ourselves on the mundane type of samadhi. So that is called kammasakata samadhi. So that is the first step. So first of all, we need to be a good person, a sappurisa. you are maintaining your morality, you are trying to develop concentration, and you are helping each other, helping others. So likewise, you become a good person. Now you have less regrets, and you have a positive atmosphere in yourself, and you feel encouraged, you feel that you are worthy. I'm a good person. You feel that you are worthy for some further enhancement or further improvement or further attainment. You are a worthy person. So this positive atmosphere is extremely important. So therefore, we can say there's a self, we are making a self in that sense. And that is necessary. And without it, actually, it is difficult to have a lot of courage or a lot of encouragement to the practice. But on the other hand, when we are developing ourselves, especially in the Vipassana, the insights are so profound and insights are so powerful. And that sort of helps us to rethink about what is going on and to reflect what is going on. So, and slowly it happens, and more and more these insights are possible. So it will cut off the delusion, it will cut off the ignorance, and this wisdom arising is not so harmful. I mean, if there's a real self, and if that real self going to be destroyed, then it has become a very fearful thing. But if this whole self is an utter illusion, then we will understand, okay, I was ignorant earlier, but now time to time I am having a good wisdom. So what I had was utter ignorance, utter delusion. Because of that, I was making an I was making a self. But now it is at least possible time to time maintain a non-self, time to time maintain a sort of a mere process, dhammata, and simply adhere to it, simply allowing things to happen. And it's a kind of a very beautiful process. And if there is no I, if there is no self-view, still the system may continue. You may not die. And instead, all the bodily processes, the mental processes may appear or may operate very beautifully in complete harmony without the interference of a self, without the interference of an I. So these insights are really sort of enriching insights. It is not that one becomes utter disappointed or utterly collapsed because of the arising of insights, but they invite you to open up to everything, and you get really connected to the environment. You become a part of the whole universe, and it is not that you become sort of isolated, rather you become connected with everything and everyone, and therefore it is a kind of positive atmosphere is further developed. So therefore it is true that we are making a self, a good self at the beginning, but later with these arising of insights, we are actually brave enough and wise enough to dilute that self, even to give up that self, because we understand that created self is an illusion. Created self happens because of ignorance. So therefore, and it's a gradual process, and various other insights actually help. Say for example, if you clearly know there is nothing a person or individual or self, but rather what is happening is a constant cause and effect relationship. One cause conditions another result. That results become a cause to another result. So that new results become a cause to another result. So likewise, it's a kind of a causal process. So more you understand in that respect, so it's more easy for us to give up the self-view. And then you will understand how a self-view is generated time to time. It is not that constantly you are making a self, but rather time to time the self-view is generated. Self-view is coming up. So you can observe how the self-view is coming up. So then it becomes the vipassana. Now, whenever self-view arises, then there's a kind of a frustration. There's a kind of an unsatisfaction. There's a kind of a burdened mind. So that you can recognize. So then the practice become understanding self-view, understanding how we are making a self-view. So therefore, there are different aspects of the practice which facilitate the diluting of this self-view, or ultimately the eradicating of this self-view.
That's right, Bhante. I understand all of that. But we still have to function
definitely.
As a person.
Exactly.
In this world. This world.
So that's why. So even that's why even the Buddha, the Arahants, they actually function as a person. Now when Buddha is talking to a monk, and he may refer the monk's name, and Buddha may refer that I am telling you, I am preaching you. So he may refer the term I. But he is internally, he is not deluded by that I. He know that he is using the language only for the communication, for easy communication, but there is no core here. There is no real unchanging self here. So as you said, when you are talking with other people, definitely we have to talk in terms of the mundane terms, we have to use our names, our identity card number, social security number, or whatever it is. So we have to use. We have to use the language. So we have to be a person. Say you are in the queue, so you have to be in the queue. So you have to drive the car, you have to obey to the traffic rules. So likewise, so in a way we are living, I mean, two lives.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Because there has to be a person also to make the Adhishtana, the Virya, all this kind of thing.
Yes.
There has to be some entity to say, I'm making this determination now and I'm going to sit for 2 hours or whatever, or I'm going to do the walking meditation. You know, it's not just happening, I believe, but it is some kind of Adhishtana that is an effort that goes into that, right?
Actually, the practice itself evolves to a kind of a pace where you do less Adhishtana. Now, at the beginning, you need a lot of Adhishtana, a lot of determination in order to break off these all say hindrances. But suppose your mind is now fairly peaceful, now less hindrances, then the meditation become part of yourself. So now you allow things to happen. Now whatever happens, you can adjust to yourself. You can be so flexible and still you can learn and you know how to tackle it. Because now less defilements, less hindrances. And now how life is coming on your way, you can handle it. You don't need to struggle with it. Now in the previous stages, you may have to struggle. You have to fight. But later, so your mind becomes so fragile, so agile. So your mind becomes so malleable, so flexible. And it is with less hindrances. And you can adjust to anything. You are like a water. Say, for example, there's another simile, beautiful simile given by certain teachers. Now, when you are pouring water to any vessel, so water does not ask any particular shape. Rather, it can become that shape. So when it is poured to a cup, it becomes the cup's shape. If it is poured to a bottle, it becomes the bottle's shape. So likewise, so you become very flexible. You can adjust to any environment, still maintaining a non-grasping attitude in the mind. So it is easy to say than work.
Yes, Pranjay. Yes. Of course, whatever we are doing is due to causes and conditions. So if you are generous, or if you are compassionate and loving kind, showing loving kindness and karuna, upeka, all these things, that is because of the causes and conditions that are ripened there. And it's happening, right?
Yeah, actually, you do your duty, you do your do it as a good thing, but not, now you are not trying to make a self out of it. Say, for example, in the previous stages, suppose when you are doing a good thing, suppose you give something to a beggar, and again that thought may come into your mind, okay, I did a good thing, and he was so happy, and this is not a bad thing. I mean, it is giving you a very good positive quality or positive atmosphere to the mind. But later, even that you can recognize, there's a making of self because of that remembrance. So there you don't need. So you did the good thing, that's done. Finish. You are now again maintaining a sort of a free mind, unattached mind, without trying to reinforce a self. You are not trying to become anyone.
And I have a Kalyana Mitra who told me, she said that she has stopped now giving things to people because to avoid that, I did a good thing, that person was happy, and now, you know, I'm also creating good karma, that kind of thing. So she has gone beyond, she's quite advanced. So I think that is correct, isn't it? I mean, after a while, we have done all those things and finished. So we have to now concentrate on this training. Would you agree with that, Bhante?
Actually, I partly agree, but there's a part to disagree as well. Now, say for example, can't you do a good thing without making a self? You can.
but you sometimes these thoughts come, isn't it?
Definitely those thoughts come, yes. And when those thoughts come, you can recognize it. So you can do simple citta anupassana, dhamma anupassana. You can understand, okay, I mean, this is not necessary. You are not promoting that self-view, and you simply let it go. And then again, the mind become peaceful. So it is not that you become very dry person. You sort of maintain a very selfish attitude. Rather, you become still a good person. But you, while engaged in good activities, still you know how to avoid making a self even using those good activities. So therefore, I don't recommend that one become extremely selfish and not doing any of these social service or whatever things. But on the other hand, there's another side. You are not driven by inner motives to do it. Rather, if there is an opportunity, if the requirement is there, you may do. But you are not trying to show off, or if you are not trying to jump to the picture. Rather, there's a real requirement is there, and the opportunity has come directly to you. There is no any substitution. Then you understand, okay, this is my responsibility. Then you do it wholeheartedly. And after
no,
the
that's
end,
what she does. Yeah. She does all for her domestic people, and now she's helping all the time. But now she has changed, shifted a little bit, so I can see what you're saying, and I can hear what she's saying also.
Right. Okay.
Right, Bhante. Thank you so much for that. Anyway, much merit.
Teruvan Sarnai.
Okay, Bhante. The last question that I've received, while doing Iriyapada Bhavana, for example, on the sitting posture, after a while, the breathing becomes prominent and the meditation turns to anapanasati. Is this okay?
I didn't get you. Jennifer, can you repeat it?
Sure, no problem, Bhante. While doing Iriyapada Bhavana...
Right, Iriyapada. Yes. Right. I missed that term.
Sorry, it is my pronunciation.
Right. Yes, you are correct. Actually, these methods can be interconnected. Say, for example, you start with Iriyapada, and once you are refining these various postures, and then suppose you are getting to rising and falling, or suppose you are getting to breathing meditation, and it is possible. Then you are in the Anapanasati. True. Correct.
And it looks like we have one more raised hand from Kumudini.
My question, it is not really a question. I just wanted to make an addition to that lady's discussion with you about the self.
Mm-hmm.
It brought to my mind that, you know, you could use it as the simile of the raft that is used to cross the river.
Yes.
We have the sense of self, but it after you've reached a certain stage, you just discard it.
That's also a good answer. Actually, there's a beautiful incident happened between Venerable Ananda and another bhikkhuni. At that time, Venerable Ananda mentions, tanha nissaya tanha pahatabbu, manang nissaya manang pahatabbu. So you are using craving in order to eradicate or remove craving, and you are using conceit in order to remove conceit. So likewise, now say for example, he is giving very beautiful simile. Say you have heard that someone has become a sotapan, and you yourself start a kind of a desire to become a sotapanna. Now, this is a kind of a self-view.
Mm-hmm.
But but this self-view motivates you to achieve it.
Exactly.
So, ultimately, you are removing the self-view. Then only you become a sotapanna. But the initial drive is taken by this self-view.
Yes.
Yeah. So, therefore,
I don't think you need to worry too much about it while you're...
Basically, it is diluting. So the self-view will become sort of slowly diluting and sort of eroding, fading away, and it's, I mean, the wisdom becomes more and more powerful, and that is how the process happened as far as we can say.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante,
for
the Q&A today. That is all of the questions that we've received.
Yeah. Okay, then thank you very much for the participation. And we'll conclude the session by sharing merits. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu desanam. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu mamparam. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.